We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What up, listener? We wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this Blue Wire podcast. Be sure to show your support to this pod by subscribing and dropping a 5-star review on iTunes, a follow on Spotify, or the appropriate dApp for any other platform you might be listening on. And if you're enjoying this show, chances are you'll like one of our 75 other sports podcasts. Find more shows you'll love at BlueWirePods.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to In the Know.
This week's sponsor is Bet Online. Make sure you check them out.
We are bringing you a special trade deadline podcast. This is our preview before any trades happen, unless, of course, there is a Woj bomb as we are recording, which then you will get our live reaction. But hopefully, we will get this out to you before any such trades happen, and you will be well informed going into Thursday. Joining me is Mason, as always. What up, Mason?
Not too much. I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy day of fighting Lonzo Ball stands on Twitter to chat with me. I feel very blessed.
Yeah, honestly, it's a lifestyle at this point. And I'm going to need some serious lifestyle changes. All right. So as you guys know, the trade deadline is coming up this Thursday, and the Pelicans have been in a handful of rumors here and there, and I don't think anyone conclusively knows where the Pelicans stand in terms of whether they're going to be buyers, whether they're going to be sellers, or maybe they're just not going to do anything at all. So here's what we do know. The Pelicans have only had 6 games of Zion Williamson. The Pelicans have split those games. They've gone 3-3. The starting lineup those games has been pretty good. Zion Williamson himself has been pretty good. And they haven't had all too much time to gather data on what the team looks like with him, but they have had a good bit of time to gather data on what the team looks like without him, which I think we've spoken about earlier, is that is also valuable data. It is important to know how guys function without some of your best players. That being said, the Pelicans do have some decisions to make. Now, I want to start off with one of my favorite topics, and it's going to be one of the easier topics to talk about before we get into some of the more complicated ones. Let's talk about Etuan Moore. Etuan Moore is a upcoming free agent. He has a salary of a little over $8 million. He is still a very productive player and could probably contribute pretty significantly on some contender or some playoff team. Do you think Etuan is moved by Thursday?
I think he's the single most likely candidate to be moved for the Pelicans. Just because I don't see I don't think it's likely, I'll say that a big deal happens. But I think Etuan, like you said, I'm so proud of you, by the way, for saying that he could help a contender. You've come so far over the last 12 months on Etuan. But I do think he could help, even if it's off the bench at the end of a playoff rotation. His ability to knock down shots, to play without the ball, to not be a total liability on defense, as long as he's defending the right position, defending twos, not threes. I think he does add value. And I think almost as importantly for the Pelicans, while obviously I don't think he even adds a full win to this team for the rest of the season, but I do think he is a net positive player getting rotation minutes to this Pelicans team. I think we've seen it and how he can help. I also think that there are some players that need minutes. And Etuan is kind of standing in the way of that. And for as long as he's on the team, I would play him until they're out of playoff contention. But if he's not on the team, that removes temptation. So I think there's a lot of there are more arguments to move a guy like Etuan than not to. But I do understand and I think we'll get into this a little bit more when we talk about Derek Favors, but there is an argument to just keeping some of these guys just because you think they're not going to get paid in free agency because there's not a lot of cap space to go around. So I still lean more towards moving them, but I can see the argument for not.
So you mentioned a couple things. I think for starters, you mentioned him being a net positive, and I think that's largely due to the guys behind him being abjectly awful.
fair enough.
It is what it is. No, but he has been a steadying presence for the Pelicans off the bench. And the question I think boils down to is, does the value, the on-court, and I guess off-court, because it seems like Zion and some of the others respect Etuan a lot off the court, does the value...
He's a bucket, man. Zion's a bucket.
He's a bucket. Does the value he provides you in that area, is it greater than his potential return? Because, frankly, like the type of return you're going to get from Etuan Moore is a bad second round pick. Maybe like one decent second round pick, right? And I think at best what you'd hope to do with Etuan Moore is if you move him, is you rearrange his salary into either a different position to where it clears up that logjam at guard, or B, you re-roll his expiring salary and you get someone that has maybe 2 years left on their deal. And you have an expiring going into next year. I think those are the things that you would want to look for in addition to whatever that draft compensation might be. I think it's perhaps a little bit ambitious to think that we're going to combine Etuan with Darius Miller, as we had talked about earlier in the summer of that being a possibility. If Pelicans wanted to position themselves to make a buy move, they could use the salary of those two players and get a player they feel like could contribute. I mean, I guess we can't take it off the table. I just can't anticipate the Pelicans making such a move at the moment. I don't know. I mean, I would say I'm on team move him, because anything back is something you could probably use in a future trade to go get someone else. But I would love to get some sort of player or salary back in his return that could help the Pelicans again in future trades. I'm not too concerned about on-court value at this moment. We talked about Trevor Ariza a little while back, and I think that was in the context of Darius Miller. You could flip Darius Miller for Trevor Ariza. You'd save Portland a boatload of money, and you know you have Ariza's contract, which is to me more valuable than the player, and it seems like he's doing fine in Portland as well. So that's the idea behind Etuan Moore. Would you peg his likelihood to be moved over or under 50%?
I think over, but I don't think it's much over. But I would put it like I put it 55-60%, just because I think he's the most likely guy to move. Would you flip it? I mean, just let's call like Darius Miller and Etuan Moore for Gorgui Dieng, straight up. Would you do that?
Straight up, like no compensation.
None.
No.
Just for the kicking the can down the road on the tradable salary?
Yeah, no, because I think you're doing the Wolves a massive favor. They've been trying to unload Jank's salary for quite some time, and there really haven't been some takers. And so knowing that, I would try to extract at least some sort of compensation out of them.
Yeah, so would I. I'm asking, like, if they played hardball and they said, well, we like how he played when Towns was out. We think he's a valuable player, and we'll do the trade straight up and otherwise no deal. You hang up?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I do, because if I'm not planning on moving Derek Favors, then to me getting
Jang, come from.
To me getting Jang makes no sense. Now, if I have a deal lined up for Derek Favors that helps me in other areas, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be pretty okay with that then. Okay, well then I guess we mentioned Derek Favors. We talked about him a lot on last week's pod. Have you shifted in at all over these last few games, or where you see his future is with the team?
Yeah, I bounced around a lot with him, and I think the part that I maybe even we undersold on our podcast last time about him is just kind of the fact that they're the limited cap space for other teams. And so, if you're worried about paying him this summer, the counterpoint of where the other offer is going to come from is a fair counterpoint. And so I think that does work both ways though. So that gives the Pelicans a reason to keep him if they think they can get him for a reasonable contract the summer. But also, if another team that would otherwise be capped out wants him, maybe they would offer something that's more than what you might expect for Derek Favors. And so, it's hard for me to say one way or the other how I feel about a Derek Favors trade before seeing it. Whereas, like, kind of with the Etuan Moore question, I'm like, well, at least it's going to open up minutes for other guys. With Favors, it's not quite like that to me. And so I want it to be a decent return for him to move him. Because I do like him, and I think if they're investing into him in the future, that means the medical staff's put their stamp of approval on it, and the concerns there are limited enough such that they would be okay investing in him. So it's truly a wait and see for me with Favors, and I mean you also can't ignore how that the team's, at least from a net rating perspective, has been pretty good with him as the starting five alongside Zion.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say, is I was completely surprised how well that fit's been going so far. And now I don't expect them to have that dominant of an efficiency going forward. It definitely seems like there is a path forward to them being good on both ends of the ball. And if that's the case, then I'm a little bit less inclined to move him. I still would like a big in the position there that can play with both Jax and in Zion at some point. I think that is my long-term goal, but you know, for the short term, if I can hold on to Favors and sign into a reasonable deal, I'm not opposed to that. I've also come back from what I think his market might be. I thought that, you know, maybe Atlanta would want to overpay him, but I've looked at some of the other bigs on the market. There are quite a few bigs on the market and not that many teams that really need bigs and have the money to go after them. So if Favors isn't the first big grabbed off the board, you know, there's other guys like Tristan Thompson and Andre Drummond and Montrezl Harrell that I feel like are going to be bigger names and probably going to eat up a lot of the big cap space for teams that are looking to get bigs. And I think I've also cooled on the Kevin Love idea, although I think fit-wise, he'd be a tremendous fit. I've cooled because, one, the projected salary cap is going to be a tiny bit lower than expected, and it just makes the Pelicans' future moves that much tighter, and I rather not have that stress of a tight cap and little wiggle room. So, but again, if I'm able to move favors for, let's say, you know, that deal manifested itself that we talked about last week, where it was Kelly Olynyk and Justice Winslow for favors and Etuan Moore, I would do that because I feel like a guy like Olynyk adds more value over his contract because it's cost controlled, or not. I mean, all contracts are technically cost. It's cheap. It's a cheap contract.
Yeah.
Then I can, it can replace some of Favors' value by paying another guy that's a lot cheaper. I would do that, but I struggle to see many teams lining up to take Favors. So I'm more willing to roll the dice with him than I was last week.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think seeing, even if it's just one agent or one team pushing information, it does seem like the Pistons aren't going to get what they were hoping to get for Andre Drummond, and there's a trickle down effect there too. If they're not going to get what they want for arguably the best big available, even whether or not he fits your team is a separate discussion. But I think that, if that's the case, then, and the Pelicans don't see something that they think they deem enough for him, especially given the possibility of re-signing him for more of a team-friendly deal with a lack of cap space league-wide, I think it's totally reasonable to hang on to him and let this thing play out.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, again, same question as before, 50% chance over or under?
Pretty comfortably under at this point, I think.
Okay. I'll put him at 45.
Oh, okay. That's a little higher than me. I think I'm more like 25-30%. Like, maybe 1 in 3, but that's the highest I think I would go.
Okay. Cool. Moving on. Let's move on to JJ Redick. JJ is still one of the best shooters in the league. He is now coming off the bench, and the Pelicans have a lot of players at his position, but the Pelicans also really value his presence both on the court and off the court. There's been reports that there are teams sniffing around for him and that he's been shooed away. Do you think the Pelicans are right to be shooing away those teams?
So it's all contextual, right? I mean, they could be shooing away offers that they think just are nowhere near his value. And that value, I'm sure, is both an on-court and off-court thing in combination. I also think that teams that are hoping to make deeper runs into the playoffs for similar reasons to what the Rockets might be running into with Clint Capella maybe realize that JJ's defensive limitations are going to be a problem late in the playoffs, and so you're probably not going to get a big offer from one of those type, like Lakers, Clippers teams, I don't think, or an offer that's enough to move a guy like Redick. But I think that's probably where they sit. And then like the fringe playoff contenders or the teams that are not really contenders but are surefire playoff teams probably aren't going to give up a young guy for someone like Redick. So I would imagine it's a combination of the Pelicans really valuing his presence on and off the floor and the offers just not being, really there for him. So I'm on board with the Pelicans framing it up such that they're shooing away offers. They don't want to move him. And so I'm not surprised.
Okay. Yeah, I am not surprised either. And I'm going to ask a question which I think is relevant for the future. So keep it in mind, but the question here is now, how many teams in the league, and particularly good teams, are even looking for a shooting guard? Seems like every team is looking for either a big or a center, and then it may be a backup point guard. But a shooting guard?
Yeah, that's kind of a weird thing to say.
I think the only team I can think of is the Sixers.
Yeah, that's weird to me, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying it's weird because it's usually a gap for a lot of teams. You know, whether it's a, I know it's usually the biggest luxury is the big wing, but obviously a smaller wing like JJ, but who can still shoot the lights out and can play off the ball, it still has value, right? I mean, I don't know. It's got
to
be other teams.
Of course it has value. I mean, like, I think if you were able to magically insert him onto the Bucks, they would love it. You know, if you were to magically insert him on the Jazz, they would love it. But how many, you know, like, of them are actually looking for a guy like that?
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I think it's not many who are willing to give up. Again, the type of offer that would make Griff, you know, think it's worthwhile. We're now going to take a quick break to tell you about our brand new sponsor, Bet Online. Miss your chance to bet on Chiefs Niners? If you're not, listener, Blue Wire is excited to be partnering with Bet Online to help you win big no matter what time of the year it is. With March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Opening Day right around the corner, Bet Online has you covered for all your latest news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Plus, it's never too early to lay down your future bet for Super Bowl 2021. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. We signed up. It's super easy. And if you're already making wagers, it's a fantastic way to support this podcast. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, when you sign up at betonline.ag. Bring your best bets home with BetOnline, your online sportsbook app experts.
So this brings me to our final guy. The guy that we're probably going to spend the most talking about is Drew Holiday. Now, Drew has been in and out of rumors for a little bit. So this all started in the 13-game losing streak, and things started to come out. Well, the Pelicans are listening to offers. And then David Griffin went on TV to say, "Nope, no, we're not, and we're not going to move Drew," or something along those lines, right? Recently, there have been, over the last 2 weeks, multiple reports around Drew. A couple of Shams reports that say he is both happy and committed to the city. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if the Pelicans were blown away, they would listen and they would act on it. Woj has mentioned the Pelicans really aren't doing it. Today, Zach Lowe mentioned again that Miami and Denver, which are the two teams that have been closely linked to Drew, are sniffing around, but the Pelicans really aren't inclined. And he kind of gave an idea of like what a deal might look like with Denver. And so with Denver, he suggested Gary Harris, Malik Beasley, that's the one.
Yeah.
I was going to say Michael Beasley. I was like, no, Michael Beasley's not on the team.
That was part of the Lakers trade last year, man. Yeah, get it right.
Godly. Malik Beasley and an unprotected first round pick. He's like, well, would that be enough to get it done? And the answer is probably no. And so he was like, well, what about if they included a second pick? Now, I'm going to lay that offer out to you. And oh, he also mentioned that the Nuggets are not going to include MPJ. So, okay. So the offer is Gary Harris, Malik Beasley, and let's just say one unprotected pick and one protected pick. Do you feel that's enough for Drew Holiday?
No, that's based on the expected value of the picks. I mean, like, I'm not, I just don't buy the fact those picks are going to be any better than top. I mean, maybe 21, 22, something like that. I just think that the Nuggets have such a nice core of young talent. I don't know if that team's ever going to be good enough to really win a title, but I do think they're built in a way that's going to make them a very good regular season team for a long time, and I just don't value the picks that highly as a result. So I'm out.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like I would, if I want the unprotected pick, I would want the pick the year after Drew's contract expires. So it'd be like the 2022 unprotected first round pick. That's what I would be aiming for if that's what I wanted. But my larger problem with that trade is the players. I think the players are just not that good. I think Gary Harris is aggressively mediocre, and I genuinely do not think he's producing at a higher level than Etuan Moore right now.
Okay.
I mean, he is 6'3", 6'4". He was supposed to be a good shooter. He had one good shooting year, one above average shooting year. And his last 2 years, he's shot a combined 32% from three. And this year, he's averaging 10 points a game, 2.8 rebounds, 2.1 assists. I mean, like, your defense has to be all world for me to be like, okay, yeah, that's a guy I want to take a chance on.
Sounds like Solomon Hill, man.
He's 25 years old, and that's not old, but that's not, like, he's not a young prospect anymore. So that's Gary Harris. And you have Malik Beasley, who is, again, buried in their rotation. And so you don't really know if he's any good or not because he doesn't get any consistent minutes. He can score the ball, but again, he doesn't really contribute when it comes to rebounding. He doesn't really contribute when it comes to assists. I don't expect his defense to be phenomenal. He's a decent shooter from three, and he is due for a payday. So, yeah, he's in his last year of a $2.7 million contract, and then he becomes a restricted free agent. And you're like, okay, well, what do you do with this? So you have Gary Harris, Malik Beasley, and then on your roster, you have Etuan Moore, which he's here now. We can pretend he's not, so you can ship him out. So Gary Harris, Malik Beasley, Josh Hart, J.J. Redick, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Frank Jackson, and then Didi Lozada waiting in the wings. You have like seven shooting guards that are about like 6'4", and they all do the same thing. That would be a terrible trade. I mean, unless I can combine all seven of those shooting guards into one Bradley Beal.
There it is.
Why would I want to do this trade? Like, those picks aren't going to do anything for me. I mean, the only reason you make that trade is if someone else either values your current players or these players, and you're flipping them for players of need. Because when you move Jrue Holiday, you're moving your singular best perimeter defender, your only guy that is checking the best opponent players defensively. I don't want to hear it about Lonzo. He does not pick up those players. He's gotten better defensively. It's just not his game to guard 1 through 4 and shut them down. That's just not his game. Brandon Ingram, we've talked about it. I would say he's one of the lower defensive players for his position. I don't think he's very good on that end. And you don't want him defending a lot of those players if he's going to be doing heavy lifting on offense. Zion Williamson is a rookie and clearly is out of position all the time, essentially. Can't expect him to be that guy. Jrue is your only perimeter defender. So you're going to replace him with a bunch of 6'4 guys, which Drew's 6'4, but he, unlike other 6'4 guys, he can actually play bigger than his size. And then you're removing the only guy on the Pelicans roster that can consistently run a pick and roll and is willing to consistently run a pick and roll. I know Brandon Ingram has gotten a lot better at it, and he's really good at scoring out of it. But when it comes to setting the table for others, there still isn't a guy on Drew's level on this team yet. So you're replacing two important skill sets with skill sets that you already have on the roster. Now, like, for real, what is the difference between Gary Harris and Josh Hart right now, or Malik Beasley and Josh Hart right now? Josh Hart is averaging 10.6 points, which is the same amount of points Gary Harris is averaging. He's shooting better from three, and he's averaging 6 rebounds a game. And he's playing less minutes.
Yeah, I was gonna say the per 36 go up even further for there.
Yeah. From there. Like you have Gary Harris on your roster. His name is Josh Hart.
I mean, yeah. I think that's not to say Gary Harris is an all around better player than Josh Hart can, like, definitively, but that's certainly doing a disservice to Josh Hart in certain areas of Hart's game. Whether it's just overall hustle, rebounding.
Yeah. So I mean, you have hustle, you have rebounding, you have tenacity in transition. I mean, he's probably the best transition finisher outside of Zion on this team. Yeah. Like I would rather give all those minutes to Josh Hart than invest in Gary Harris.
Yeah. The only possible, and I agree with you that like I said, that the picks and I also I'm largely aligned with you on the players being not enough. But the only counterpoint I think has to be mentioned, because it's something we just brought up with Favors, is the possibility that you could steal if there's a young Denver player you really like, and you think you can steal him in restricted free agency because of how tight the market is this summer. That would be the only reason. And even then, you're still rolling the dice. It's a guy you like because of your scouting and your analytics team that maybe you value more than other teams around the league, and you can get him in a deal for Drew, but it's a part of a deal. There's no centerpiece of that deal that doesn't happen with at least a couple picks. So, I mean, with obviously the caveat that Michael Porter Jr. is off the table. And so, I don't see
a deal. And there's some other guys. Like there's Juancho Hernan Gomez, who people act like he's some sort of hidden gem, but he's failed to
played 400 minutes this year.
Right. And he's failed to crack their rotation. Like, oh, well, they're a deep team. It's like, okay, then why hasn't he been traded for something better? Or I don't understand. He's played 4 years in the NBA. His rookie year, he averaged 13.5 minutes a game. His second year, he averaged 11 minutes a game. His third year, he was, I guess, a rotation player. He averaged 19.4 minutes a game, and now he's back to averaging 11.9 minutes a game. The year that he was a rotation player, he had 5.8 points per game. He shot decently from three. And like, okay, maybe this is the type of player that you expand his role and he can be better, but as of now, like we struggle to get Melly minutes. Like where does this guy get minutes?
Yeah.
And there's Monte Morris, who I actually like. I think he's probably better than, I don't want to say he's better than Gary Harris, because I don't know, but he might be. He's the one guy that can actually run an offense. He's a solid point guard, and the Pelicans could use that on the bench, but then it kind of like puts you in an awkward position with Nah.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, well, how much do you invest in Nah? So like, I mean, they have these weird players and they can clearly contribute and off the bench, but do I want to trade Drew Holiday for a poo-poo platter? Like, no, I don't. And so I'm pumping the brakes on any Denver trade. The other team that was mentioned, and this one intrigues me a lot more, is Miami. Miami, Zach Lowe said, is unwilling to put Tyler Herro on the table, which to me just reads like jockeying. It's like, whatever, of course they're going to say that. Yeah. You know, the Pelicans didn't want to pay the luxury tax because of Mirotic, even though that was never a concern. That to me, like, whatever. So what are some Heat pieces that intrigue you, and what would you formulate a trade to look like?
So Harrow's on that list.
Is he a non-negotiable?
He's close to it. I don't know the picks that Miami has coming down the pipe. I assume they're not good because they're usually the ones trading out draft picks, not getting them in. But maybe I'm wrong on that. I have to look at Real GM for that. But
yeah, I'm pulling it up. Keep going. Okay.
I mean, so I'm higher, and this is one of the things I think we've talked about in recent pods. I'm higher on Justice Winslow than I think you are, but at the same time, I can't just ignore all the injury issues he's had over the last year and a half. And so that does scare me. I like his skill set. It's awkward alongside Lonzo, if that's a guy you're also investing in. But I think if you're just trying to accumulate talent, I don't dislike the idea of adding Justice Winslow to this team. But I do think the injury issues are real. But like if Harrow's not on the table, you need what? I mean, you need obviously Bam's not on the table. That's a non-starter, kind of like Michael Porter for Denver. And you've got Duncan Robinson. You've got, yeah, I mean, like Derek Jones. I don't know. Like, I think it falls off kind of quickly. I'm not that bought in on Kendrick Nunn. I mean, he's got his own fair share of off the court issues before we even get to the on court stuff. So he's not a guy I'm super high on. So I don't know, like Harrow kind of by default becomes almost a non-negotiable, but maybe they can put something together without him. What do you think?
So the only incoming pick they have is a 2022 second rounder from Philadelphia or Denver, yeah, the least favorable one.
Who cares?
They've traded their 2021 first round pick and their 2023 first round pick. Yep. So
okay. Sounds
I
about right.
Think that means they cannot trade their 2020 first round pick currently until draft day. Because that would mean they owe two consecutive future picks.
Right. Yep.
So the earliest that they can trade a pick is like 2025. And
yes.
So you could potentially be like, okay, give me a 2025 unprotected first round pick. And maybe that turns into something one day. And you have the Lakers, you know, picks out far out there too. So like that's a really far out gamble. But in terms of players, like, first of all, to me, Tyler Harrow would be a non-negotiable.
I think he has to be, just looking at the guys.
I think a trade doesn't happen without him. I'd be happy to eat any bad salary they want to send me. To me, that doesn't matter. I would love, you know, here's a debate that I've had with McNamara, and I think I put it on Twitter, so I'll ask you, who has more value to you, Duncan Robinson or Justice Winslow?
I lean very slightly Duncan Robinson, but again, that's only because of how injured Justice Winslow has been over this season and last. Like, I just don't trust him enough. And I think you're going to be pretty definitively in the Duncan Robinson camp, right?
You know, I was team Winslow camp. But I think I've switched over to the Duncan Robinson camp.
Okay.
This guy is averaging absurd splits. I mean, he's averaging 12 points a game. He's shooting 43.8% from three on 7 attempts per game, almost 8 attempts per game.
He's third on the team in minutes, and he has the second best plus minus on the team, or net rating on the team behind Jimmy Butler of the guys who play real minutes, and that's higher than – he's ahead of Bam.
Yeah, he's shooting like 90% from the free throw line, so I'll never have a free throw concern with him in my life. Honestly, like if you grab Tyler Harrow and Duncan Robinson, this is Max fetish of a trade, and he obsesses over this combo. But if you grab those two guys, you have two elite shooters to put next to Zion and Ingram. That you could close games with, and how do you defend that shooting?
Fletcher just had his dream come true.
We'll grab Kelly Olynyk too, but I'm serious. So like, yeah. To me, I would ask for Harrow and Robinson and any bad salary they send me, and I would do that without a pick. If they send me those two players in salary, I'd do it without a pick. And then
you don't have a point guard, or sorry, Alonzo Stans.
What that move signals is putting the ball in the hands of Ingram more, and Zion. And Lonzo still do Lonzo things, and you know, maybe it opens up a pathway for him to grow into that kind of player. I still don't think that's going to happen, at least while he's a Pelican. But what it does is it puts the ball into the hands of Ingram. And be like, okay, well, you're going to be the guy in the half court, you know, and you know, maybe Tyler Harrow has some on ball chops that we don't know about. I think he's better than people let on. He's not strictly a Kyle Korver type player. He does have some playmaking and vision that he's flashed. So who knows? Maybe he develops really good chemistry with Zion. But those are the two players I would ask for. And then if they, you know, they're probably going to balk. So if there's any combination of Harrow and Winslow, I'm asking for picks and other stuff. But that's kind of how I'm building my trade, is around Tyler Harrow and Duncan Robinson. That's what I'd want to do. And if Miami came to me with those players, I would do that trade. I think the biggest problem with me with the Duncan Robinson and the Harrow trade is, again, you're committing to a team offensively and you're hoping
okay. I was about to go there like what does the defense look like
you're
with those guys?
Hoping that, you know, a guy like Favors and Zion develops, and Jacks, like the bench and whatnot, are going to be good enough and your team defense is good enough. But man, that is a team that's waiting to get steamrolled by a super talented wing player in the playoffs. Like that's what's happening now. I think what happens is it could open up pathways for you to go get more 3-and-D type of hustle guys. Mm-hmm. But, you know, honestly, the Pelicans should ask for all three, Harrow, Robinson, and Winslow. Fuck it. That's just where you start your negotiations and see if you see where you end up. No. But, I mean, that would be the argument for Winslow, right, is he's your wing defender. And mm-hmm. so you would close games with something like Lonzo, Harrow, Ingram, Winslow, and Zion. Mm-hmm. And you could probably make that work defensively.
Yeah, I think you could.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's a tough ask. I don't anticipate. So, yeah, let's same question. 50% chance over or under of Drew shipping out this deadline?
I think it's under, but I do agree with you on if there's any team that can make the right offer for him. I think it's Miami. I don't see a realistic path to a Denver trade.
Do you think he's more or less likely to be moved than Favors?
That's a good question. I think it's close. I think just because I think Miami is the only team that can make an offer I'd say yes to, I'd say maybe Favors is slightly more likely than Drew. Do you see anything while we're on the Drew subject? Zach Lowe did mention Toronto. But he also did say that he didn't think Toronto would have the appetite to put the right players on the table to make a deal work for Drew. But is there a trade you would accept from the Raptors for Holiday?
It would have to include both of Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby, and then whatever they need to make the salary work. But I do not make a trade if it doesn't include both those players, because to me, those two players then fill both the needs that I talked about. VanVleet is a ball handler and great in the half court, and he kind of functions as Toronto's creator, with Lowry's been more of their connector this year. And I think he's a fearless player. He shoots really well. He can play both on and off the ball. I think he'd be a really good fit with Lonzo. Mm-hmm. And then Anunoby is your very typical strong multi-positional wing defender who you would look to close out games with. So I would need both those players. I don't know if Toronto would do it. I think Toronto's goals are to not have money tied up in 2021 because they want to make a Giannis run. I think Miami's goals are similar. And so what Drew does is he complicates that by having his player option that year for $27 million. My only counter to that would be – I have two counters, right? So counter number one is a lot of teams are going to have cap space that year, and I think Drew's going to be a very marketable player. I think he's going to have
opts out. Yeah,
I think he opts out. Two, if for whatever reason he doesn't opt out, I think he'd be extremely movable. Mm-hmm. I think many teams would want to take 1 year of Drew Holiday, and especially teams that have cap space and they strike out on players. Yeah, they would happily absorb Drew Holiday into their into their cap space. So I don't think that's that much of a concern, but that's where Toronto's head is at. I also don't know if you know, they want to throw off their dynamic by moving, I guess, two rotation players for.
Yeah, when they're playing really well this year. Yeah.
They are playing really well this year. But those would be must-haves for me. And if you're Toronto, you have to kind of look at your draft success and your developmental success and feel like, man, like, you know, we found these guys. I mean, Ananobi was a first-round pick, but Fred VanVleet was undrafted, you know. And so I feel like you have to be confident in your own organization. Like, okay, if you can get a guy like Drew, get him. We can always find the next VanVleet. Because they have Terrence Davis this year, who was undrafted. They got Siakam in the second round. I mean, I think as an organization, you kind of have to trust yourself. They, I mean, that's not going to be part of their trade negotiation, but that's how I would look at it if I was trying to talk myself into acquiring Drew and giving up those pieces.
Hmm. Yeah. I think I'm in agreement. As much as I want my boy Norm over in New Orleans, I think...
Well, maybe not, he has to be the salary that makes it work.
No, I mean, I think it's fair because I think VanVleet is one of those guys who could present more value to a team that's trading for him than the Raptors, just for the exact reason you just stated. Maybe they don't, you know, as much as they may like him, maybe they don't want to tie up big long-term salary in him because of their books. And so a team who's trading for him, you know, that you're obviously, if you're trading for a guy like him, you're trading with the intention of keeping him. So I think he kind of is a natural fit in any sort of trade that they would offer. And so, and I agree that OG's got to be in there as well. So that starting point makes a lot of sense to me.
So here's a question for you. VanVleet is a free agent this summer. Do you think he gets over or under $20 million a year? And what is the highest number you'd be comfortable giving him?
I don't think he'll get over 20 just because of the market dynamics. I'm trying to compare it to recent contracts. And so like,
so here's something for you. The average starting point guard in the NBA makes around 20 mil a year. Like you look at the starting point guard for every team that's not on a rookie contract. It is supremely difficult to find one under 20 mil. And if you do, it's like 18 or 19.
Not to split hairs. That's average, not median, right?
Because
we do have the, I feel like players like,
I mean, I'm not Chris counting. Ball. I'm not counting like this. No. I think, yeah. So what I mean to say is non starting point guards that are not on rookie scale contracts are very expensive. I mean, I think the cheapest one is Rubio at $16 million.
Yeah, it's interesting because VanVleet kind of doesn't fit the normal archetype of those players. So it feels like it's either vets who have been around for a long, like not necessarily old players, but
he's 25.
Definite vets. But he's always been like there with Lowry. He's never been the guy apart from injuries.
So he's averaging 17.8 points per game and 7 assists, and he's shooting almost 40% from 3 on 7 attempts a game.
Sorry, fair enough. I meant like until this year. And so, I mean, I guess – so, like, I would pay him more than that. I think I'd pay him I mean, if it takes – if that's what it takes. But at the same time, I just wonder, are there a lot of teams you think who have cap space that are going to make him target number one this summer?
The Knicks?
Their fans will be so mad. Not because he's not a good player, just because they don't know who he is.
Does he want to go to the Knicks after you've been on like a championship level team? I don't know. He was undrafted, so I mean, he just want to collect the bag. I think a team that comes at him with a massive offer would be able to grab him. But I'd be happy. I'd be comfortable giving him the Buddy Hield deal, which is, I think, was like a 4-year, $94 million contract with like incentives that could reach 106. Well, I think his base was like 85 or something. So like, you know, your base is like 21, 22 million and incentives can bump it up. I'm comfortable giving him that. I'm pretty comfortable giving him that. I'd be very, very happy with Van Vliet. I think from both a personality standpoint and a skill standpoint, he is a really good fit. I just don't think Toronto has any motivation to make a deal. Not an aggressive one like that.
You mean aggressive deals and trade him, or aggressive deals and the contract extension?
Trade him to the Pelicans. I don't think they're.
So you think they, if that deal was on the table for them, that same Buddy Hield contract, you think Toronto does it without thinking twice?
I haven't looked at their cap space. I don't know how that sets them up for 2021. I think
it'd be difficult. Are you worried about his size?
No. I think he's
small.
He's a tenacious defender. I think he'll guard
you. You've got to be super tenacious at 6 foot. I mean, there's only so many Chris Pauls out there.
Yeah, but Toronto starts both Lowry and Van Vliet, and they're like 6 foot each. And they're a really good defensive team. I think he does everything you need to do on defense. And I think he's a two-position defender. I don't think he's more than that. He's not Jrue Holiday. It would require a lot more from Lonzo and Brandon Ingram going forward if those are your two pieces. But I love his fit entirely otherwise.
Yeah. And yeah, so their books aren't – actually, I was looking at the
– Oh, Siakam's getting maxed. So can they fit a Siakam max, this guy on a $20-plus million deal, and Giannis – I think that gets dicey and difficult, and they have to fill out a roster. I think it would be cool if you could just sign and trade him this summer.
Yeah, and I think that's a realistic option.
That would be the way to do it, is just sign and trade him, which, again, I don't know if they would do that this summer, sign and trade him and Anunoby for Jrue Holiday.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. Yeah, they've got – it's nice they've got the one more year of Anunoby, and then he's restricted the Giannis free agent year. And even then, his cap hold would be well under what they inevitably end up paying him, I think. Yeah, his cap hold would be 11.6, which is more than I thought. But, yeah, because it's like 2X your restricted free agent tag. And they've got Lowry for $30 million next season, which I forgot that was declining, which is nice for them.
Can you think of any other wild card team that may be interested in Jrue?
Interested, sure. That would actually
or be capable.
No, I don't see it. I think the Lakers have a guy who the salary match works for.
LeBron.
Yeah.
LeBron to the Pels. I bet Lonzo fans would be so upset if LeBron ended up on the Pelicans in any capacity.
Oh,
my God.
This guy again. LeBron's going to
hold him back again.
LeBron's going to hold him back.
Drew's holding everyone back, in case you haven't heard.
Yeah. That's the new story.
So I'm going to end this podcast by asking you one last scenario. Come Thursday after the deadline, is Frank Jackson still a Pelican?
We got a semi Woj bomb to hit after that, even though there's no actual deal done. But I think Frank Jackson's still a Pelican, and I don't want him to be, but I think he will be.
So Detroit and Phoenix are discussing a deal centered around Luke Kennard. Speaking of teams that want shooting guards, I guess they want a shooting guard.
White shooting guards.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, you think he's going to be a Pelican? I say he is not going to be a Pelican. Frank is out of here.
Yeah. What?
No more random minutes for Frank.
I like Kennard. I'm wondering what's going on here. Phoenix, I'm just used to Phoenix making bad deals.
Why? Here's the thing. Why is Kennard already on the market? He's like their one young player,
yeah.
and he's on the market. That tells you that should be a red flag, in my opinion. That should
for
be
his value.
Flag. Yeah.
Well, who knows what
there's something off. But I mean, speaking of, I mean, like she's a good shooter. He's got a similar profile to Mr. Tyler Herro and Duncan Robinson. Man, this could be a steal. Are the Pistons dumb?
I mean, they did snag Christian Wood from us, and who's looked pretty good.
Well, Christian looked good with us. Christian Good looked good. Yeah, Christian Wood looked good.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's up with Kennard. I feel like if they're willing to give up on him, they have no good reason to give up on him.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And they don't have much in the way of shooting either. Like it's
they're not really in. Yeah, so if they're willing to give up on him, I feel like there's something off, and I don't know what that is. Maybe it's because they fear his upcoming contract. That's got to be the only thing. Maybe they fear that he's going to ask for 20 plus mil, the Buddy Hield deal.
He's done nothing to – like, I think the potential certainly there for him to be a decent player in this league, but I don't see the – wait, when's he restricted?
In a year. He's in his third season right now. So the team will have him – would have him for 1.5 years or 1.3. Yeah.
But even so, you've got to be even if you're terrified of that. Like, who are you looking for on Phoenix, man? Like, I respect what they that they've had their moments this year, and like for a little while they could be a playoff team. But I don't know. Like, where are they going to get? Is Phoenix moving Kelly Oubre? Like, I don't think so. I don't see that.
Maybe.
Is there a young guy on
maybe this is Detroit's way of like dumping Reggie Jackson. How long does he have left on his contract? Hold on. I'm pulling this up. Reggie Jackson has only 1 year left on his contract. So they can't be dumping Reggie Jackson. I don't know. This makes no sense to me. Yeah, well, we'll see. I'm sure Phoenix will find a way to mess it up.
To mess this up.
Yeah, I'm sure. But if they don't, then hey, good for them. I wonder, maybe there's something serious about that knee injury. Mm. Bilateral knee tendonitis. That means it's on both knees. He has tendonitis on both knees. That's crazy. Cool. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Good for Kennard. I don't think Frank's going to be here. We'll see. Do you have a wild card prediction of a Pelican? Do you think this Pelicans roster is going to be the exact same come Thursday?
No, I think they do something little. Just to make the rotations a little more clear. I think Moore is the most likely candidate, but maybe it's Frank. I mean, just some way to clear the logjam at guard and make the worst coach in NBA history, Alvin Gentry's job, a little easier for men's distribution.
Yeah, make it simple for him. Cool. Well, we will be back on the mic if there is a trade regarding the Pelicans. So stay tuned. I think we both figure that there will be one. And let us see. Thanks for listening.